بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، والحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. سيما بقية الله في الأراضين.
Welcome, my dear ones. Our youth, our teenagers. You have made the environment in this Husseiniyah very pleasant. Your pure hearts, your souls, filled with passion, illuminate the environment and make it pleasant wherever you may be, and whatever the environment might be. I have prepared some related topics which I would like to share with you today, my dear children. The first topic is about the 13th of Aban. You have heard about it a lot. The 13th of Aban is a historic day. It is both historic and educational. When we say it is a historic day, it means that on this day there were events that will remain in history. These events cannot be forgotten, and they should not be forgotten either. They are educational because there have been reactions as a result of these events that serve as a lesson for us. Make use of these experiences for the future of the country, for your future, and for the future of our nation. The future belongs to you. This day is an important day for us, but it also really agitates the Americans. This is a day that frustrates the Americans whenever it is commemorated. Your meeting, this meeting, when it is shown, you can be sure that the Americans will be angered by this gathering, this anthem, this communion. They will be agitated by it. Why? Because this day is the embodiment of the evil of the United States and its defeat. So those who think that the US is an untouchable power, when we look at these events that took place on this day, it becomes evident that this is not the case, that it is completely vulnerable. This turns into an experience for us. Three events took place on this day, some of which are directly related to the Americans, others are indirectly related to them. One event was the exile of Imam Khomeini, which took place on the 13th of Aban, November the 4th, 1964. Why was Imam Khomeini sent into exile? Because of a law that was ratified by the direct order of the Shah, Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, to the parliament of that day. According to that law, the Americans who were in Iran were granted immunity. There were about 40 to 50,000 Americans in Iran, in military, security, and economic organizations. According to this law, if these individuals committed any sort of crime in Iran, they could not be prosecuted. So for example, if an American happened to run someone over while driving their car, the judicial system of the country had no right to prosecute them. This was the immunity law of the Americans. Imam Khomeini did not tolerate this. He gave a long speech. His voice and the text of his speech are available today. Because of this speech, he was exiled for 13 years. We say 13 years because the revolution happened at the end of these 13 years. If the revolution hadn't taken place, this period of exile might have lasted 30 years because of his opposition to this pro-American law. This was an event that was almost directly related to the Americans. The second event was the killing of the students. A number of children who were around your age were massacred in front of Tehran University. They were killed. We can't say the exact number because these sorts of statistics did not exist back then, but a number of them, even one is too many. A number of our children were martyred in front of the Tehran University. The second event also took place on the 13th of Aban in 1978. The third event which took place a year after that incident, after the victory of the revolution, was the students' attack on the American embassy. During that attack, many documents were found that revealed the United States conspiracies against the Iranian nation. These documents have been published in 70 to 80 volumes. You probably don't have the time to read these books, but there was a time when I told the Ministry of Education to include these themes of these books in school textbooks. Unfortunately, they didn't do it. These documents show what the Americans were doing during the time that they were in Iran. That is, from around the years of 1949 or 1950. It shows their conspiracies and acts of treason. There is a point to be considered here regarding the attack on the American embassy, which they actually called a spy den. And it really was in their statements and advertisements and interviews, including the interview they conducted with myself during my trip to New York when I was president. The Americans have introduced this event as the beginning of the dispute between the Iranian nation and the United States. They claim that the reason why the Americans stood up against the Iranian nation was because of what you did at the embassy. That is, you attacked our embassy, and as a result, a dispute was formed, a fight was created, an enmity was formed. They're lying. That's not the issue. The dispute between the Iranian nation and the U.S. began on August 19, 1953. On August 19th, a national government was at work. Mossadegh's government was a national government, and the issue he had with the West was about oil. Mossadegh was neither a Hujjatul Islam cleric, nor did he claim to want Islam. It was just about the oil. The country's oil was in the hands of the British. He said our oil needs to be in our hands. That was his only crime. The Americans staged a coup d'etat, a very bizarre coup d'etat. There are some vague things about that event in my mind. I was 14 years old then. There's a big difference between the time that we were 14 or 15 years old and today's teenagers. Today, you understand and analyze things accurately. But that's not how it was for us back then. I've read the history behind it, and I'm aware of the details. The Americans sat and conspired against Mossadegh and created and crafted a coup. Even though Mossadegh trusted the Americans, he trusted them. He even liked them. He thought that the US government would support him against the British, but they stabbed him in the back. They sent their agent, whose name was Kermit Roosevelt, to Iran. They had coordinated it with the English. He coordinated it with some traitorous military personnel and a number of British-affiliated elements. They gathered up some thugs, killed the military troops, and created that disgraceful coup on the 19th of August. They also arrested Mossadegh and his entourage. Some were executed, and others were imprisoned for many, many years. The disputes between the Iranian nation and the United States date back to the 19th of August. Why did you stage a coup against a national government that was elected by the people? Why did you overthrow it? You gave the oil that he, Mossadegh, had taken out of the clutches of the British to a consortium which included England, the United States, and several other governments. So it went from the frying pan into the fire. Our dispute with the Americans started from that day. Because of their interests, which was only oil in those days, the Americans did not show any mercy, even to a person who was trustful towards the US and a westernized person. Mossadegh wasn't westernized. Well, that was the beginning. Now American politicians are hypocritically and shamelessly saying that we support the Iranian nation. You hear these words in the news and on social media and in other places. They say we support the Iranian nation. Well, this is an extremely shameless claim. I would like to ask the Americans the following question. Is there anything that you had the ability to do the Iranian nation in the past four decades that you haven't done? Whatever they didn't do was because they weren't able to do it. It didn't benefit them. If they could, they would have done it. If it was worthwhile for them, and if they weren't afraid of the Iranian youth, they would have started a direct war like in Iraq. But they were too afraid to do that. They did whatever they were capable of doing. They supported separatist groups at the beginning of the revolution. They supported the coup d'etat, the attempt at the Nojim military base in Hamadan. The Americans showed the support for the blind terrorism of the Munafiqun, the MKO, which led to the killing of thousands of martyrs across the country. They supported the savage Saddam Hussein during Iraq's imposed war on Iran. They provided him with weapons, intelligence, and information and aid. They made the Arabs pay money. There is some information about this, which I'm not completely certain about, but apparently it is reliable information, that even the start of the war was provoked by the Americans, and they were the ones who forced Saddam to initiate the 8-year war. They, the Americans, shot down an Iranian passenger plane in the skies of the Persian Gulf, which resulted in the deaths of over 300 people, and they did not express any regret. They even rewarded that criminal general who shot down the plane. They honored him with a medal. This is how you have treated the Iranian people. You imposed sanctions on the Iranian nation since the first year of the revolution. You imposed the most severe sanctions that history has ever witnessed in the last few years. They said it themselves. as well as their support for unrest and sedition in Iran. You clearly supported the seditionists during the sedition that took place in 2009. Prior to that, Obama wrote to me saying that we want to cooperate with you. We are your friends. He was in a sense swearing that he did not wish to overthrow us. However, as soon as the sedition of 2009 began, they started to support it in the hope that the sedition might go somewhere and bring the Iranian nation to its knees and overthrow the Islamic Republic. This is how you treated the Iranian nation. You Americans openly declared that you killed our fearless general. You murdered him, and you were proud of it, and you announced it, that you gave the orders. Martyr Soleimani was not just a national hero, he was the region's hero. Martyr Soleimani played a major and unparalleled role in solving the problems of several countries in the region. You martyred this great man and his companions, Martyr Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, and several others. You supported those, the Zionists, who assassinated our nuclear scientists. The Zionists martyred our scientists one by one, and you supported them. Not only did you fail to condemn them, but you also supported them. You have frozen billions of dollars of the Iranian nation's assets in the US and in other countries. If this money was at the disposal of the hard-working administration, like the current administration, it would be able to do great things with it. But they froze these assets and they kept them. This excludes the assets that were frozen in the US since the beginning of the revolution. The United States fingerprints can be seen in most anti-Iranian events, and then they claim that they empathize with the Iranian nation. They said this again yesterday, that they empathize with the Iranian nation. They lie with complete insolence. Of course, they have shown great enmity towards us, but the Iranian nation, getting the better of them, has thwarted many of these enmities. Some of these events are still with us. We have not forgotten them. We never will. We will never forget the martyrdom of Martyr Soleimani. They should know this. We have said some things about this, and we stand by our word. It will happen at the right time, at the right place, God willing. The America of today is the same America of yesterday. The America of today is the same America of August 19th, 1949. It is the same America that helped Saddam Hussein. And it is the same America of the past few years, with one or two important differences which we must pay attention to. First of all, the enemy's tactics have become more complex. We need to pay attention to this. The enmities remain the same, but the method of applying these enmities is different and more complex. It is not easy to untie these knots. You need to pay attention. You need to be alert. Of course, we trust our own children, our own youth, our own officials. We know that they are capable of dealing with these things that are complicated, but it is complex. This is one difference. Secondly, that day, the 19th of August, and the like, and even until the beginning of the revolution, the US was the dominant power in the world. But this is not how it is today. This is one important difference. Today, the US is not the world's dominant power. Many of the world's political analysts believe that the US is declining. It is gradually melting away. We aren't the ones saying this. Of course, we have the same opinion, but the world's political analysts are also saying it. The signs are evident. The United States' domestic problems are unprecedented in the economic, social, and moral fields, as well as their internal conflicts and the blood-stained divisions inside the country. Another sign is also their miscalculation of the world's affairs. For example, 20 years ago, they attacked Afghanistan. The Taliban were in power at that time. In order to eradicate the Taliban, they invaded Afghanistan, spent money, committed crimes, had casualties, killed a lot of the people, and so on. They stayed in Afghanistan for 20 years, and after 20 years, they were forced to exit Afghanistan, handing the country back to the Taliban. What does that imply? It shows their miscalculations. It shows that the calculation system in the US is no longer organized, orderly, and accurate. They don't comprehend the issues well. They misunderstand them and act in the wrong manner as a result of this. Their attack on Iraq also ended in failure. The fact that you see elections in Iraq today, where an Iraqi citizen is elected, this is not what the Americans wanted. When Saddam went, the Americans insisted a military official as Iraq's head of state. And then they realized that they can't continue with a military official. So they removed him and replaced him with a civilian, Mr. Bremer, as the top official in Iraq instead. This means that the country of Iraq was to be governed by a non-Arab, non-Iraqi, an American ruler. I have mentioned that I have some matters to say about Haj Qasem Soleimani. One of the things is the issue, but now is not the right time to talk about it. This was their intention. Their intention was not to leave Iraq. They then tried to appoint their own agents, but they failed completely. They failed in Iraq, they failed in Syria, and they have failed in Lebanon. The recent agreement between Lebanon and the usurping regime, Israel, regarding the issue of the maritime gas field borders and the like, was a part of America's failure. This is because the Americans started ordering things. It must be done this way and that way. Hezbollah rejected this. This is America's failure. It is obvious that their calculations are inaccurate. One of the things that, I'm saying this now, some other people across the world have apparently said it too. I believe that one of the signs of America's decline is the election of people like the current and former president. A country of 300 million plus people almost destroys itself and elects a president in the previous term. Somebody like Trump, whom the world considers to be crazy, and after he was defeated, a man like this current one comes into power. And well, you know the stories about him. This is evidence of the decline of a nation. This is evidence of the decline of a civilization. So this was the matters related to America. Many other Western powers are similar to the US in these aspects. Now, I don't want to name them, but some of the other Western powers are like America in this field. In their media, they teach destruction. They teach people how to riot and how to make Molotov cocktails and hand grenades. What is the reason for this? The issue is not that they are committing a crime by doing this. Yes, it is a crime, but it is also depravity. This is deprived behavior. When a government or a governmental organization media acts this way, it is a sign of their moral depravity. The United States also played an obvious role in the recent riots that took place in our country in the past few weeks. The announcement made by the Intelligence Ministry and the IRGC Intelligence Organization is an important announcement. It is very detailed, and some cannot be bothered reading it, but we have received their information and reports. This information is very important. There is a lot written on this subject. The discoveries that our intelligence services have made in this field are very valuable. They sat and orchestrated plots for Tehran. They devised schemes for large cities and for the small cities. The appearance is that there are a handful of young people or teenagers in the field. These young people are teenagers, are our own children. We don't have anything against them. They are filled with excitement and emotions, and they are a bit inattentive towards understanding these issues. But no, we are more concerned about those who are orchestrating the events. They are the ones who entered the scene with a plan in mind. What I am saying should be considered by everyone. They have a plan in mind. Our officials should keep this in mind. Fortunately, our intelligence officials are paying attention to this. Our political officials, our economic officials, all of our officials should realize that they came onto the scene with a plot. The people and you, the youngsters, should also realize this. They entered the scene with a plot. Their plan is to make the Iranian nation stand with them. They want to make the Iranian people believe in the same things that the British and the American leaders believe in. That is their plan. This is their intention. However, the Iranian nation punched them in the mouth, and it will continue to punch them in the mouth after this. The ones we are really concerned about are those who have devised these schemes and entered the scene of action with intention and plans and knowledge. They were connected to foreign agencies. They committed serious crimes. The incident that happened in the Shah Cheragh Shrine in Shiraz was a great crime. What did the boys in the second grade or sixth grade or tenth grade do to deserve this? The poor six-year-old boy who lost his father and his mother and his brother in this criminal act, why did they weigh him down with so much grief? Why? How is this child going to bear this immense amount of unbearable grief? These are crimes. They are great crimes. The young, pious, and religious student, our dear Arman, who was martyred while being tortured, and his lifeless body was abandoned on the streets of Tehran. What did he do to deserve this? Are these minor things? Who are these people? We need to think about this. Who are the people doing this? They are not our youth. They are not our children. Who are they? Who is giving them the orders? Why haven't the so-called supporters of human rights condemned them? Why have they not condemned the Shiraz incident? Why do they repeat false claims thousands of times on their platforms on the internet, yet ban the name of Arsham, one of the child victims of the terrorist attack? Why? Are these so-called supporters real supporters of human rights? That is what they are like. We need to organize these. We need to organize them. Of course, we will not let them get away with this. The Islamic Republic will definitely make these criminals pay. Whoever is proven to have collaborated with these criminals or has played any sort of role in these atrocities will undoubtedly be punished, God willing. I would like to share a few words with you young people. First of all, the teenagers of today, unlike the teenagers of the past, is a mature element, a wise element. It was not like this during my time, I'll tell you. I'm talking about myself here. When the case of August 19th occurred, like many of you here, I was around 14 or 15 years old. There was a specter of cases happening before our eyes. But determining who they were, on whose side this person was, on whose side that person was, what was their purpose, why were they doing these things that they were doing? No, we did not pay attention to these matters. The teenager of today thinks, analyzes issues, understands the analysis correctly, and realizes things. The young people of today are analytical people. This is a very important point, and it's very significant. Our children and our youth have things to say, and this is the nature of the Islamic Revolution. Let me say this. This is the nature of the Islamic Revolution. If there was no Islamic Revolution, our young people, not teenagers and children now, young people in their 20s, they would be so preoccupied with frivolities and lust that they would not even remember to think about the country's fundamental issues. This is how it was back in the day. I used to come here in these streets. There was a place called Youth Palace behind the city park. It was early in the evening. A number of young people had left the palace and had come onto the streets. It was some sort of party. I was a student then. I was passing by it, really perplexed, to see the way these young people were dressed and things that they would do on the streets. Now, would a young person with these characteristics be bothered to think about the country's political issues, the country's future, their responsibilities, and these sorts of things? It was the Islamic Revolution that awakened the youth, both during the uprising. In the final year of the uprising, when the youth entered the scene on the instructions of Imam Khomeini, and after the uprising up until today, our youth have been growing every day. They are able to analyze and comprehend events. Now this is a fact. The enemy understands this reality, just as we understand it. The enemy also understands that the youth today are well aware of these things, and that they are focused, and they are intelligent, and they are capable of analyzing things. So what does it do? The enemy is not going to remain idle. In order to neutralize the state of our youth, the enemy has started creating content and targeting the minds of our younger population. The large amount of lies that are prevalent on social media platforms are a result of this. All of these lies and all of these distortions and all of the divisionary conversations and the accusations are all made so that the enemy can create content for these active minds. This is why I keep saying that you need to engage in the jihad of clarification. You have to create content. I'm addressing the officials here, the media officials, the communications officials. You need to create content which contains truthful and correct information and convey it to the youth before the enemy creates content that is false and misleading and filled with lies. The enemy is busy doing this. Now listen, while you're here attending the session today, I want you to go back and really start planning for it. This is what I really expect from you, youngsters. Now I'll say it again. Our time is passing, but it is a good opportunity for me to talk with you for a little. So the enemy is busy making plans. Like I said, our officials need to feel responsible. They need to know why the enemy is sensitive about a certain word, a certain name, and why they keep banning it. They need to know why the enemy keeps publishing so many lies on social media. They need to resolve and deal with this. This is the responsibility of our officials. You young people also have a duty. You need to feel responsible as well, and in order to distinguish the truth from the lies. I believe it can be done. It is not impossible. They want to ingrain certain things using large volumes of repetition in the minds of the youth. But you can tell whether this contradicts reality or not, distinguishing the truth from lies and distortions. Secondly, be wary of those who are of the same opinion as the enemy. Guide them. I'm not saying you should fight with them, but guide them. Explain them things. There are people who agree with the enemy. Although it is not international, some do not understand. They are uninformed. One can see how certain individuals are saying things on social media or writing things in newspapers. These people are not antagonists. They have just misunderstood things. These individuals need to be guided. The best person who can guide them is you, the young people. Write to them. Talk to them. Send them messages. Explain things. And reason with them in your gatherings. Of course, we know that dealing with these issues should be planned. The events that occurred these past few weeks were not merely street riots. They were detailed plots. The enemy initiated hybrid warfare. The enemy, namely the United States and their Zionist regime, some insidious and malicious European powers and some groups came to the scene with all of their capabilities. What do we mean when we say they used all their capabilities? It means they used their intelligence services, their media, their social media capacity, and their past experiences. They have had their experiences in Iran. They had experiences in 1999 and in 2009, and the years after that too. But they failed there. They are using those experiences, and they are bringing those experiences to the scene. They have done these things in other countries as well. They have sustained some blows, but they have also had some successes. They use these experiences well. The enemy has brought all these capabilities to the field these past few weeks in order to defeat the Iranian nation. And like I said, the Iranian nation literally punched them in the mouth. The Iranian nation has left them wanting. So now this is the expectation that I have for you, my dear youth, and all the other youth who will hear this talk later. But I do have another expectation as well. I mentioned in one or two of my previous speeches that there are many signs that indicate that the current world order is changing and a new world order will prevail over the world. What role do we Iranians have and where will we be positioned in this new order? This is an important question. What is this new order that I'm talking about, where the current order will be replaced by the new one? It cannot be said for certain. The dimensions and nature of the new order are not exactly known, but a layout can be drawn. There are some basic lines which will certainly exist in this new world order. The first basic line of the new order is the isolation of the United States. In the new world order, the United States will be isolated, contrary to what George Bush Sr. said 10 to 20 years ago about the Americans being the only dominant power in the world. After Iraq attacked Kuwait and the Americans crushed the Iraqi attack, George Bush Sr. arrogantly said something along the lines of today, that the U.S. is a be-all and an end-all of the world. America will no longer have an important place in this new order that I am talking about. It is isolated. Yes, it is going to happen. Death to America will materialize. By the way, some people say that when you say death to America, it makes the Americans become hostile towards us. I say that's not the case. When the Americans started their hostilities on August 19, 1953, no one in Iran was chanting death to America, yet they still inflicted a blow to us. Their blow was not a consequence of this chant. When they struck us on December the 7th, the same year, killing and injuring students who were protesting the state of visit of the U.S. Vice President Richard Nixon, the students at Tehran University started chanting death to America. Death to America is a reminder of December 7th. The chant started on that day. The Americans struck before that. So, the U.S. will have no choice but to stop interfering in various parts of the world. The Americans currently have bases in many different regions, including our region, in Europe and in Asia. They have populated military bases whose expenses are paid by taking money from the poor countries in which this base is located. These countries are expected to cover their expenses while the Americans sit back and lord over them. This will be over soon. The United States will have to pack its bags and leave these places. This is the first main line of the basic lines that form a new world order of the future world. The second basic line is the transfer of political, economical, cultural, and even scientific power from the West to Asia. Today, Western powers have political authority, scientific authority, cultural authority, and economic authority. They have many things. However, perhaps a more accurate interpretation would be to say that they had these things, but are gradually losing them. But they had these for many years. The West acted like this for two or three centuries. In the new order, the state will be transferred from the West to Asia. Asia will become the center of knowledge, the center of economics, as well as the center of political power and the center of military power. And we are in Asia. So that is the second point. The third basic line includes the expansion of the idea of resistance and the resistant front against coercion. The initiator of this is the Islamic Republic, because ever since the Industrial Revolution took place and the Europeans started advancing and colonizing other countries, they made the people and the countries of the world get used to the fact that the submission and dominance are two inevitable corresponding parts of the world. This means that the world is split into domineering governments and countries and states that can be dominated. This has been the situation, and this domination system has been around for several centuries. Everyone agreed that they should accept the domination of the Western powers, even their culture and appellations. Let me say this here, and I've said it before. They call our region the Middle East. What does the Middle East even mean? It means that the origin and center of the world is Europe. Like that story about Mullah Nasruddin, where they asked him where the center of the world is, and he replied, "The place where the nail of my donkey reins are pounded into the ground, that is the center of the world." Any region that is far from Europe is called the Far East, because it is far from Europe. Whichever country is close to it, like some North African countries, they are considered to be the Near East. Those that are in the middle of these are known as the Middle East. This is the basis for naming countries by Europe. This is how Westerners were so self-entitled. This is why I insist on not calling it the Middle East, but West Asia instead. It is in West Asia, after all. Why should we call it the Middle East? The Islamic Republic was the one that formed the spirit of showing resistance towards tyranny, power-seeking, and hegemony of the domineering powers. The first person in the world to say neither East nor West was Imam Khomeini. In those days, the world's power was split between the US and the Soviet Union. Imam Khomeini said neither this nor that. All the countries in the world had to either be connected to the US or to the Soviet Union. They felt that they had no choice. But he said neither this nor that. This spirit, this logic, this solid and firm word has spread. Today, there are many people in the region who consider themselves to be affiliated with the resistance fronts. They are ready to resist. They believe in resistance. They resist, and in many cases, they get results, like the outcome that was achieved by the Lebanese because of Hezbollah's efforts in the case of determining the maritime gas field borders. I've talked about three basic lines: the isolation of the United States, the transfer of power to Asia, and the expansion of the resistance front and the logic of the resistance. Indeed, other matters can also be added. They are in my mind, but these things were the most essential issues. So what is Iran's role in this new order? Where will Iran be placed? What position will our dear country hold? This is the thing you need to think about. This is what you need to prepare yourselves for. This is the thing that the Iranian youth can work on. We can have an outstanding position in this new order. We really can. Why? Because our country has outstanding features that many other countries lack. First of all, we have human resources. We have really good human resources. The intelligence and talent of young Iranians is higher than the average intelligence and talents of the world that exists. Today, we are seeing the outcomes of the intelligence and talents of those who were born in the 1980s and the 1990s. The young people and those who are making innovations and updates in various scientific and technological areas are allowing the country to rank among the top 4 or 5 countries in the world in a number of areas. These are the same people who were born in the 80s and the 90s. They are bearing fruit today. God willing, the Iranian nation will also witness the blessings of those born in the early 21st century, which makes up most of you who are here today in the future. Of course, there will be some disruptions. Some problems exist which can create hindrances. So our first advantage is that we have good human resources. The second advantage that we have is the forces of nature, our country's nature. We have many resources in our country. The diversity of our country's natural resources is among the rarest of the world. In one of my speeches in the same Husseinia, I don't remember the statistics right now, but I remembered in that day, because I had researched it, I mentioned that we make up 1% of the world's population. 1%. Now there are a few essential metals that there are necessary for industries, and these essential metals are also available in our country, and they constitute 4 or 5% of these metals available in the world. This means that we have more percentage of natural resources in proportion to the size of our population. I mentioned metals, but the same goes for our plant resources, our medicinal plants, and our mines. We are very wealthy in that sense. I have addressed different administrations, insisting that more attention should be given to our mining industry. Unfortunately, not much attention was given to it, and many of them did not listen to the things that I had said. I hope that by the will of God, the current administration will attend to these issues. I have heard that they are doing great things in the field of mining, so this was another important point. Therefore, our country is advantaged both in terms of its human resources and its natural resources. It is also an advantage in terms of its geographical position. We are the crossroads of communication between the East and West and the North and South. If you look at the world map, you will see that we are located at a sensitive point. The East and the West can pass through us, as can the North and South. We can turn into a highly advanced and superior transit location in the world. Railway lines will be required. I need to have this heart-to-heart with you young people. I have repeatedly stressed that the need for these railway lines with different administrations, but unfortunately, it has been neglected. In the early days after the demise of Imam Khomeini, some work was done on our railways, but nothing much was done after that. But God willing, some good things are planned for it. We need to, God willing, be able to find our place in the transit and transportation field. The thing that is actually more important than all the aforementioned advantages is the logic of the government and civilization, which is the Islamic Republic. We have combined a republic with something that is Islamic. We have combined the people's presence and their votes and their opinions with divine knowledge. Combining these two things is not an easy task, but we have been able to do it with God's grace. It is not flawless, and I have never claimed that we don't have flaws in these areas. No, we do have flaws. But our words, our logic, it is a new type of logic in the world. So that was about those issues. My last word to you, my dear young people. You see, whatever you do, whatever we do, whatever we all do, our words and our actions, they all send signals to those outside our country. We need to be careful with the messages that we are sending. These messages are not necessarily in words. Sometimes the way you even sit can also send a message. Sometimes your gatherings in certain places can convey a message. Sometimes these things you chant can send a message. Be mindful of the message that you're sending out to the world. I believe that the most important thing that must be relayed to the enemy by the Iranian nation and the Iranian youth is the Iranian nation's power of resistance. The Iranian nation, the youth of Iran, must use their actions and movements and slogans and their work to let the world know, which of course the enemy will also understand, that the Iranian nation has the power to resist. It is determined to stand up to coercion. Indeed, this is the duty of the people. The officials have great responsibilities. Our officials have many responsibilities in this field. Shortcomings of the past should not be repeated. Some government organizations need to play a highly active role in this field. These include the Ministry of Education, the Ministry of Science, the Ministry of Health, the Ministry of Culture and Guidance, and the ministries related to production, the Ministries of Industries and Mines, the Ministries of Agriculture, or the ministries related to the issue of transportation. These are important organizations. The Vice Presidency for Science and Technology, which has the duty to connect the elites to the elite foundation, these organizations have great duties to perform. My dear ones, you can be certain that if I do my duty, and if you do your duty, if the different organizations perform their duties, wherever any one of us are situated, if we understand what our responsibilities are and do them, all of the country's problems will be solved and we will achieve our ultimate dream. May God's mercy be upon our magnanimous Imam, our predecessors, our martyrs, and the families of the martyrs. I wish you all the best, and may God protect you all. God bless you.